Florida Basketball, our podcast, is brought to you by the Gatorverse, an exclusive community dedicated to connecting University of Florida fans and student-athletes. Members receive access to exclusive autographed collectibles, real-life experiences, giveaways, VIP events, rewards, and athletes receive a majority of revenue from sales of their collectibles. That's the way that NIL is supposed to work. To find out more about becoming a Gatorverse member and Lockermania, visit Gatorverse.io. That's Gatorverse.io. Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman, Saturday Down South. On this episode, Eric Fawcett, GatorCountry.com, and I are going to break down Florida's route of Florida State Friday night in the O-Dome. Obviously, a pretty exciting weekend to be a Gators fan on the hardwood. Florida's women's team pushes FSU in the afternoon session, and then the Gators manhandle the Noles, leading wire-to-wire in the evening game, which I thought, when you really look, it's a kind of performance that this team needed to show after the way they played Monday. They really came out and took it to the Noles from the opening tip. And so I think, that's as good as you can do against your rival in some ways. Now, I think, and one thing that we'll talk to Eric about is this, in my view, kind of is a perfect win, folks. Like, you win by 20, but you make a lot of mistakes, especially with like ball security. And then I thought Florida was marvelous in the gaps defensively in the first half and then like not in the second half. So there are sort of errors defensively that they'll really want to address and get cleaned up. There were errors offensively that they'll want to address and get cleaned up. Like, if you're a coach, this is good because you won and you played really well for a while, but there's also a lot of teachable stuff, Eric.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always of the opinion that, you want to play well always. Like, I've never been one of those, it's good to take some licks. Winning by 100 would be the best way, in my opinion. But anyways, I know what you're saying. And I think it's just something that's, encouraging to people that – to see the Gators, win a game like that, not playing incredible the whole way, like that just wouldn't happen for the last 4 years of Florida basketball. That's what just kind of jumped out to me about that is the Gators for years wouldn't have beat the 352nd ranked team in the country by 30 or by 20, I guess is what it ultimately was. If they gave up as many offensive rebounds as they did, if they turned over the ball like they did, if they shot free throws like they did, like that, they just wouldn't beat anyone by 20. So to see that they could do that against a rivalry opponent, that's pretty huge. So that would be the definite encouraging thing for me.
Yeah, Florida shot the ball. I thought one thing that was encouraging was ball movement and, quality of shot. In the first half, I didn't think it was like Florida was just, I didn't think Florida was just making a ton of shots. Like, they were getting good shots and also making them, Eric.
Yeah. I think again, the biggest thing that struck me about this game and the biggest thing that was completely encouraging and moving forward for this team is that I thought the Gators had some good game plans, some good set plays. They had a really nice counter to this dribble handoff ball screen play. They've opened a couple of games with, they opened second halves with, they've ran it a couple of times and they ran a really nice counter that turned into a Thomas Houck three, I believe it was him, for that first collegiate three. They had a really nice, just kind of, I'll call it a horns slip where they set up in that horns formation. They know that Florida State's going to try to deny things. They just played against that pressure and gotten easy too. Like, it was great to see them score with some set plays, with some, with a good game plan against that pressure. But I think what was most impressive was the fact that the Gators just were able to move the ball, one, against that denial kind of defense that we saw so many Mike White teams struggle against. Of course, I will say that caliber of athlete on Florida State is not the same, but not only did they move, but they were able to attack closeouts and those, like, I won't call them like, I don't know what the word would be, but with teams that play so high and up the line, when you reverse the ball and they like kind of stunt into the passing lane just to kind of push that pass away. And the fact that the Gators were just so assertive playing off the catch, getting downhill. And that was the other thing that struck me was,
I don't
think the Gators have a ton of elite creators, in the sense that, like, again, when things get tough and they need someone to go get a bucket, are they the best team in the country at that? You know, we'll find out. Zion Pullen certainly adds to that. But like, they just had a number of guys where it was, you know, Zion Pullen looked great. As someone who just could catch the ball assertively with good footwork and get downhill. Will Richard has taken strides in that area. Of course, Riley Kugel has that great first step. And then Walter Clayton is as well, who, as much as I don't think he is someone I want to be the primary initiator. And this game just proved to me, where he played so well off ball reversals and then attacking, just again, proved to me that there's a role that he should be in. And I think that was what was most impressive, is that the Gators were able to put up a good amount of points, not even having to have a great game plan or a bunch of great set plays. They just had guys, a number of guys that could pass, dribble, and shoot. And that's kind of what you need to do against tough defenses. And is Florida State the best defense the Gators will play this year? Absolutely not. But they will certainly play games in the SEC where everyone is well scouted and they're playing against a very good defense, and you're just going to need guys that can play out of ball reversals. And I thought that was where things were most impressive. And I thought this was the first game of the season where I actually thought that you could say confidently Florida's half court offense was really good.
Yeah, no, I thought it was really good. You mentioned the way that they were able to reverse the floor. And then you mentioned the other big point, which, Walter Clayton off the ball, a lot better. Look, one thing that's funny is, like, I think, well, we had a couple shows, like when they signed Clayton, and then we had shows when they signed Clayton where we discussed it. And then I think in the over under show, we talked about like how, you know, maybe Walter Clayton would be the guy that led Florida in 3-point attempts and like by somewhat of a wide margin. And there he was shooting 8 of Florida's like 18 threes, on Friday night. And I think every single one of them was off the catch. and so like that to me was just sort of eye-opening, like how much more effective he was off the ball. And even then, like, even when, you know, he did put the ball on the floor, a lot of times it was off the catch, let's attack a closeout. Then he had the one spectacular play where he took the feed from Pullen and got 2 defenders up in the air. And I mean, that was kind of aggressive and bad defense for sure, but he still gets the 2 defenders up in the air and then sneaks into the lane and gets basically a layup off the glass. I mean, that's, you know, really nice stuff. So he can attack and stress defenses, but he's going to do that best off the catch. And I think, so you saw like why this team could win a secret scrimmage against a team like Miami, who's obviously looked pretty good in the regular season with Zion pulling on the floor. Like, it definitely brings the offense together, even on a night where Florida does not really take care of the ball very well, except for pulling. And on a night where Micah Hanlockton was a little hamstrung by foul trouble again, Florida still just run some of their best offense of the season. Maybe they're, you know, certainly plays their best half of the season in the first half, Eric.
Well, yeah, and I mean, perhaps there's something to be said about the fact that, like, did they play well against Virginia offensively? No, not at all. They actually played quite horribly offensively. So then, you know, you play Florida State, who's the exact opposite defensive philosophy, and they play really well. Like, maybe we just have now learned what style of defense at this current moment the Gators struggle against and what they play well against, because playing against Florida State up the line, on the line, They just were fantastic playing against the pack lining at Virginia, pretty poor. So right now it just seems like, okay, well, we know what the Gators are good at and what they're not at this moment. Let's see where they get to by the end of the season. And it was last year in, like, a couple of years back, a lot of teams in the SEC were a lot more aggressive. And then last year, one of the, like, running storylines that I don't think we talked about as much, just because, I don't know, Florida wasn't maybe good enough that we needed to get into these types of conversations, but like the SEC as a whole shot the ball so terribly. And a lot of coaches in the league were like, oh, the SEC is horrible. We're going to be a little bit less aggressive and we're going to pack the paint a little bit more and we're going to stack the strong side of the floor. And we're just going to dare teams to shoot ball reversals. So I'll be interested to see what defenses the Gators face, but hey, there are some teams in the league that are for sure going to play this style of defense. And maybe the Gators just feast on that and, you know, need to figure out something a little bit better against teams that are in the gaps a little more. But yeah, I think that on the Walter Clayton front, it was funny too, because even within the same game where, like, overall, it was a fantastic game for sure. But, like, we saw exactly what is successful for him, playing away from the ball and playing off the catch. And then we saw what wasn't, because he had a couple bad turnovers. And I think he could have, like, I'm not saying he should have been credited with these two turnovers, but Tyree Samuel got two turnovers that to me were 100% Walter Clayton's fault. And both of them were him just trying to bring the ball up the floor, where it was clear that Florida State was like, we're picking up Walter Clayton full court. So there was the one where Walter Clayton saw pressure and just could not wait to get the ball out of his hands. So he just threw that, like, high looping pass over the shoulder of Tyree Samuel, had to make a tough catch in the middle of the floor. Like, it was like a suicide pass, you'd call it in football. And that up the middle with it, where a safety would take your head off. Well, that was the basketball equivalent. And he caught the ball knowing he was going to be surrounded. Then he traveled. And then there was the time where he just, like, was at the sideline getting denied. And I don't think he wanted the basketball, because he didn't make any play towards the ball. And then Samuel, like, yeah, maybe should have called a timeout. Maybe should have just eaten it. He tried to throw it. So, like, to me, that was like, maybe Tyree Samuel should have done something different, but, like, that was on Walter Clayton trying to be a point guard, or not trying to be a point guard, put in that position to be a point guard. So, like, we even saw in the game what is going to make him successful, which is playing off the ball and playing off the catch. And he was fantastic. Then there was just the only warts on his game was when he was put in position to be a point guard. So, I don't know if we want to transition into Zion Pullen, but, like, that is, you know, you add in Walter Clayton playing incredibly in off the ball scenarios, and Walter Clayton, whose first game, you know, I guess it could have gone better, because he could have, you know, hit a million shots and scored 100 points. But, like, I'll say, you know, with reasonable expectations, his first game went about as good as you could imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Eric, and I think it's important to recognize, you mentioned something earlier, like, you know, Florida, you mentioned the Mike White era, and Florida always looked out-athleted against Florida State. They did not really look out-athleted against Florida State on Friday night. Now, you're right, this is kind of a different Florida State team. The other difference, and this was something I thought you astutely pointed out on the previous show that Ham doesn't get enough credit for, is, like, they always had, like, really good guards, you know, and, like, they were known for being huge. They were known for being athletic, but, like, there was always Dwayne Bacon or Vaughn Wafer or players of that ilk. I'm sure I'm forgetting people that are better than those two guys. You know what I mean? Like, that just could hit a big shot, that were physical, that were tough. Zion Pullen, you know, he would have fit in on some of the really good Florida State teams. Like, he is not afraid to scrap on defense. Like, he had a spectacular defensive play in the first half that led to a run out. He also just is so under control. Like, it's different than Andrew Nimhard, for sure, but there is definitely a lot of under controlness, but not, you know, but able to stress defenses, which we did not see from Kyle Lofton. And that, it's not that Kyle wasn't under control. Florida obviously did not turn the ball over very much last year. And they are turning the ball over at a prolific rate this season. But with Zion Pullen back, we saw, I mean, his turnover was very late in the game. under control, and then also able to attack the defense. And something you pointed out on your Patreon video, which came through again in the game Friday, is Zion Pullen, he can finish a little bit.
Yeah, I have to say, and I mean, our Patreon supporters will have to be the real judges of this, but I think I'm batting a pretty good percentage on Patreon, you know, predictions of stuff that we're seeing for better and for worse. The biggest one notably would be that Alex Condon's been better than I would have expected. But anyways, if you want to see those videos, they're on Patreon. I think the first thing with Pullen that stuck out was like, comes off the bench. He looks like a brick house. Like, I don't know if people realize this, but like, he is massive considered, like, as opposed to what he looked like last year. And I don't think he was skinny last year at UC Riverside, but he was definitely in that like tall, lanky kind of mode of point guard. And I think the first couple of games when he was sitting in his Jordan sweater, you just like didn't realize how big he was. And then he checks into the game and you're just like, oh, his arms are twice the size of what he was. His chest is twice the size of what he was. So like, I mean, shouts to Victor Lopez. And again, in the past, you'd see players come to Florida and they bulk up under kind of the previous regime's idea of what basketball players should look like. And then they would lose they'd lose all their dynamism. They'd lose their flexibility. They'd lose their jumper. And then you see Zion Pullen, whose jumper looks better than it did last year. He was moving fantastic. He was getting low. He was flexible. You saw him slide his feet on defense. Like, I don't know. Like, I thought just like, that's kind of like what struck out is like, this guy looks like an NBA player, just like physically, where like, he was always obviously tall, but the fact that he just looks massive, and then he's playing against Florida State and there's like 6'7" guards picking him up and he still looks massive. Like, that's again, just like a very different player than Florida's had in their program in recent years. So I would say that's the biggest thing that jumped out at me right away. And then you kind of saw the veteran savvy, the calmness, the great decision-making. Like, again, it just kind of looked like the game was like extremely slow for him. In a positive way. Like, it just seemed like everyone else was going half speed and he was just seeing everything going on. It looked like he wasn't even really breaking a sweat. And every time he attacked the rim, he had one kind of like wild attempt. That was maybe a little bit of rust on a weird kind of fading floater to the baseline. But like, other than that, he just like seemed to just like make good, smart decisions. Which is obviously what people thought. He was a calming presence where, again, some of Florida's other guards were getting sped up. And then he, you know, takes two threes, hits one of them and looks, you know, both times his form looked great. You probably like to see him hit a couple more free throws, but I mean, hey, 6-for-9 in his first game of the season, isn't too bad. So, Zion Pullen, fantastic. He was actually the KenPom MVP for whatever it's worth. Those are always interesting. I don't know if you would have necessarily said he was Florida's best player, but you'd certainly make that argument.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought he was because of the way that Clayton became such a weapon on offense and just the way that Florida's offense had a flow to it. I kind of felt he was the MVP. I thought when Micah Hanlockton was able to stay on the floor, he was, again, really good, right? 8 points, 7 rebounds. Still commits too many fouls in his defense. Doug Shiles and Terry Oglesby were calling everything in the history of the world Friday night. And I think that certainly, I mean, anytime a game is 2.5 hours long, it's usually officials related. It has to do with the way that the game is being officiated. This game was no different. I think what happened is both teams came out kind of chippy in a rivalry game. And Oglesby and Shiles were just like, we're just going to call everything because we don't want this to get out of control. That failed. but Micah Hanlockton again with, I guess he didn't foul out, right? He got 4 fouls. Clayton fouled out though. So Florida defending without fouling. I tweeted something about how Todd would get asked about it. Golden just immediately says like, one thing I really wish we would do better is, you know, defend without fouling and consistently play better gap defense, which those are things that I kind of thought on that side. And that's how a 52-22 game became kind of you know, a 20-point game in the end instead of a 30-point win.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't really think that the Gators or Seminoles have, like, earned the benefit of the doubt when it comes to, like, not fouling. So I know a lot of people were really upset with the officiating. You know, I get it, and I don't. There's
right.
just,
right.
like,
yeah, to be clear, I wasn't mad about the officiating. I just thought they called everything. I'm not saying it was a poorly officiated game. They just kind of made a choice that that's what they were going to do. And in that respect, it was consistent, right?
Yeah. And there's just plenty of other people for sure that were upset at the officiating. I was definitely upset with the blowout taking half an hour longer than it should have. So that's probably one thing I like very much maybe disagree with a lot of people, where like, I kind of like, and again, you know, the robo ump is coming in baseball for sure. At some point, but like, there's something that's nice about like a blowout in a baseball game where these umpires just start calling everything a strike just to like move things along. It's like, hey, it's an 11 run game. Like, let's get this thing moving. So like, kind of wouldn't mind that as long as people are being safe. And yeah, I thought it probably could have let some things go in this this blow game, and probably both teams would have agreed with it on some of these, you know, hedge outs that turn into blocking fouls and all that. Speaking about a rivalry, like, it was kind of nice to see Walter Clayton in the post game just say that he hates Florida State. Like, again, like, I am all for transfers and building your team that way, but like, I think a lot of rivalries in college basketball are not what they used to be, because it's not as many in-state kids that have been playing for their programs for 3 or 4 years and seeing the same teams every year and having that kind of rivalry build. And yeah, you get an in-state kid like Walter Clayton who has no problem saying what he thought about Florida State and what this game kind of meant to him. And he backed it up by playing super well. So I thought that was something that was fun. And then, you know, just seeing a rivalry game that still takes place in on-campus situations is great. I hope that, not that this was like the greatest Florida crowd we've ever seen, but still just like having these games on home floors is really good. So I thought that was good. And this Florida State rivalry has really turned into a strange one where Florida State like dominated for 7 years and there wasn't many close games, which kind of like didn't make it feel like a rivalry game. And now the Gators have had 3 consecutive comfortable wins where it like, yeah, it got a little chippy at the end. But like, and who knows, maybe next year with Clayton back and he says something else about Florida State and that gets Florida State riled up. But like, this is just a bizarre rivalry because it's like a rivalry that has had like 2 or 3 competitive games in like 10 years. So, I don't know, like, I guess I will say it. I kind of wish the games were closer. Like, yeah, I wish the Gators didn't lose 7 in a row, but like, kind of would like some more competitive games. But yeah, it just kind of shows where Florida was and now where Florida State is.
One thing that was funny is the rebounding, right? Like, I tweeted something out like late in the game where Florida has out rebounded FSU the last 3 seasons, and in the 7 game losing streak that happened once. So it's almost like the, you know, the old like football rivalries are like, whoever runs the ball is going to win, you know? And it's like, well, that seems simplistic. And then you look at one stat and you're kind of like, interesting, you know, but again, it speaks to the point of this isn't the same Florida State. You know, like, I watched them and I don't need to waste precious podcast time telling people how much I love Leonard Hamilton. But without Dennis Gates and Andy Enfield and, you know, the people that they've lost on that bench, you know, I don't know. Maybe the end is nigh for Lenny, because this doesn't look like a FSU team that's going to be anything more than 500. One guy I was really surprised with, and you spoke about it on the preview, but, you know, Bubba Miller, just a complete non-factor. In this game. And I'm just kind of wondering what FSU is doing with him. Cause when you watch him play in Europe, it's just a completely different dude.
So like, there was like 22 points, I think, for Florida State in the first half. Like, this might sound hyperbolic to say, but like, if that game happens again, I could see a scenario where Florida State has like 11 points. like you look at the fact that like obviously Florida's defense was suffocating. Florida State had 22 points in the first half, but like when you look at the shots that they made to get to 22 points, they were difficult. Like there were the desperation, late clock, like throwing up at the rim on drives, praying for a foul call. There was some like tough leaning jumpers that rattled around. Like it's crazy to say, but like Florida, like who was up 30 at the half, could have been up like 35 or 40. Cause like Florida State just had nothing going offensively. And I think that you saw their frustration in the shots they started to take, where like there was 18 seconds on the shot clock and Bama Miller took some jumpers he probably shouldn't take. I mean, he didn't take that many shots, but like two of them that he did take stuck out at me. Of course, Darren Green, who was completely shut down by the Gators, he forced up some that you could just see like, there was some frustration. And again, I think it was Darren Green's probably feeling like, okay, we're down 17 points in a blink. If I don't get hot, like we're not winning this. And he just took some bad ones. But like, yeah, I thought that like, yeah, it was very difficult discerning what they were trying to do offensively. There was some slice screens for post-ups that weren't very well executed. They didn't get good position. And, you know, if so, they, even if they got it, they don't have great post-up players. And again, we've seen stronger, more physical bigs do really well in post-up scenarios against Samuel and Hanlockton. But like when it's like a length on length battle, like that was not working for them. So yeah, again, this isn't a Florida State podcast, but yeah, I just thought that they played such uninspired basketball offensively, and it was tough to see. I mean, the overall product of Florida State has been, it's been tough to see, but yeah, just particularly the way, and they've shot a ton of threes and made a lot of them going into this game. But it's like, I don't even know how they, like you look back hindsight being 2020, at how they've forced or how they got 3-point shots in their wins over bye game opponents. And it was, you know, a lot in transition. It was, a lot on, offensive rebound kickouts, or you know, they post it up and the teams, they're double teamed and they kick it out. But it's like they only had 13 3-point attempts against the Gators, and it was like, again, full credit to Florida's defense, but it was also like, what is Florida State doing? Like they had nothing to generate anything. So I just thought that was both Florida's, like, I don't know. I guess you could say it's hard to say what Florida's best defensive performance was this season, but I think this was probably both their best offensive and defensive performance, just the way that obviously Florida State not great offensively, but the Gators just absolutely turned the water off from like the opening tip. I thought that first half was incredible defensively.
Yeah, it was the best half of the Golden Era. With all due respect to the win over Tennessee, it was the most complete half on both sides of the floor. Lee Humphrey and Neil Blackman, Lee Humphrey with better credentials, were gushing over Riley Kugel's defense on Darren Green, which I thought was worthwhile praise from Lee and from me. But only the second time in Darren Green's career at FSU that he's not made a 3-pointer in a game. The other time was a game against Nebraska on a neutral floor last year. And then at UCF, it only happened once in a game against North Alabama. Sorry. So the guy's a shooter. He didn't do anything. He couldn't get shots off. When he did take shots, he took one, to your point, Eric, in the first half where he like caught the ball and was facing his bench and just kind of turned and fired. And I think Kugel was just kind of like Kugel looked up and didn't move. And I think Riley was just stunned that he shot the ball. and Zion pulling rips down the rebound, and then Florida was kind of off to the races. Right. And like, I thought, man, just the shot selection, as you mentioned, and it is good to see Kugel kind of putting a bow on this game. It's good to see him playing good defense because his offense is still such a work in progress, and the finishing at the rim stuff isn't getting any better.
Yeah, it was, you were talking about the radio broadcast. I've been mixing in the radio. Like last year I did it a good amount with Sean Kelly, but who I think is really good. Obviously he was gone, but really like Kyle Crooks as well. So mixed in that. And there was a time where I was streaming it from Synergy, the kind of like analytics film tool. And I don't know, a bunch of media was talking about this, but the Wi-Fi went out for a while at which like kind of caught me scrambling because that cut off my feed. So I was like going to put on the game and I was like, oh, just while I do it, I'll just throw on the radio broadcast. I ended up singing for a while. But as soon as I did, there turned out to be some good creative work from Kyle Crooks talking about the way that some of these layups were spinning off the rim for Google. So I mean it's you know, something he's probably needs to work on. And it's one of those things too that when a player struggles to finish at the rim, it's like you see the misses that he has. And in every one of those scenarios, pretty much, you'd still say like, well, you don't want him passing out in those situations. Like, that's what's strange about if a guy is struggling to shoot particular shots, it's easy to be like, well, like, don't take those shots. When you get to that part of the floor, move it, like, things like that. But it's just like, you don't want Riley Kugel to stop attacking. A lot of these attempts, you still want him taking. It's just crazy. Like reductive, but I'll say lack of touch. Like, there's just so much that goes into finishing. But again, like, I think a lot of it is like when he gets there and elevates over guys and seems to get a clean look off, and it just seems to not come close, like hitting the wrong side of the backboard and just spinning around the rim at 100 miles per hour. It's just like, if it was just to be a reductive look, I'd just say like, yeah, he just lacks touch. And so a lot of things for him to work on that sense. But to see him be impactful defensively was fantastic. To see him impact things when the shots weren't falling. And then it was actually nice to see him take one of the, you know, I mentioned the podcast, and he just wants to get to a step back and over again. And that's what made him really successful last year, was just like getting to a step back over and over again. And like, he had one of those step back threes that was just pure. And again, it's how many of those you want him taking. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, Trey Mann was someone who took a lot of those shots and hit them at like 35, 36%,
right,
which made it a great shot for the Gators. And you were like, hey, get to that step back whenever you want. Will Kugel get to that level? Maybe not, but if he takes one or two of those a game and has it in his bag for late clock situations, that's going to be big.
Yeah, no question. Florida will be tested, I think, at the NIT. Eric Pitt off to a 4-0 start. That's who's up first. All I've been able to do with Pitt is watch some highlights and kind of read up on the scouting report. I did get to talk to them. I spent a lot of time with Capel and with Ishmael Leggett and Blake Henson, who might have been the most funny human being at ACC tip-off. He said his goal for the season was to dunk on people. And when I asked him, really? And he said, no, I can't even be more serious. My goal is to dunk on people. He goes, I was such a bad finisher at the rim last year. And he said, you have no idea what my numbers would have been like if I just dunked on people. And it was pretty funny. But point being, like, this is a man's team. They are big. They're strong. Blake Henson is a problem. He's a mismatch problem. Florida already had issues with Ryan Dunn. One mismatch problem. So I don't think things with Blake Henson are really designed to go much better. I also am relatively fond of the Diaz Graham twins. Like, I think they're better than they're given credit to be, if that makes sense. But you know, it's an interesting Pitt team, because the two things that stood out just kind of watching them, in addition to Blake Henson just looking like he's going to have another first team all ACC year, is they have a young backcourt that seems to be struggling with things like ball pressure and ball reversals. And then they are not nearly as good in ball screen defense. Now, there's not any harm in that. They're 0.79 points per possession in ball screen defense last year. And then the way they defended pick and rolls was among the best in the country. They're below average in both categories on synergy this season. So it's just four games, but it's not like they're playing, the Bucks in their first four games. So those numbers aren't really spectacular. And, you know, I do think that their offense, at least at this point, is ahead of their defense. Another interesting thing about them, before I kind of let you talk, is you know, the first few years of the Capel era, they would play this kind of like high ball pressure, then kind of get into a 2-3 zone sometimes just to slow teams down. And they played one possession of zone defense this season. So they're clearly like not doing any of like the defensive wrinkles. And Capel got asked about that after the Florida Gulf Coast game, which was kind of nip and tuck for 40 minutes. And his response was, "We just aren't good enough defensively to do many things that are complicated right now." That's a direct quote. So just kind of behind defensively, but really dangerous front court.
Yeah, I would be, you know, we'll see. Like if I was playing North Carolina, A&T, Binghamton, Florida Gulf Coast, and Jacksonville to start the season, like I might not roll out zone because now they enter a stretch with Florida. Of course, either Oregon State or Baylor, Missouri, Clemson, West Virginia. Like this is now they have like a very, I shouldn't say strange. This is how a lot of teams used to schedule, like four bye games and then get into like a huge chunk of good opponents. And Capel's kind of an old school coach. That makes sense. So like, I don't know, like I wouldn't be surprised if this is where the zone came out and he just didn't want to put it on film against Jacksonville, who they 50 pieced, and North Carolina A&T, who they almost 50 pieced. So like, yeah, they're running out, you know, these teams. So yeah. I don't know. I'll be interested. I'm not calling it, but wouldn't shock me. Yeah, I think that their front court has a lot of dudes that are, you know, tall and thin. You mentioned the Diaz Graham twins. I think they are, I think they're twins, brothers, twins. I think they're fantastic. Yeah, they're only sophomores, so like, yeah, they are young, but like 6'11" twins that play really smart. They're thin, but I think they're going to be really good. Like, those are guys that in their, you know, third or fourth years could make up like one of the best front courts in the country. And then Federico, another kind of tall, lanky guy. He's someone who was forced into a bigger role last year than he like maybe was ready for. He started a lot of games and you know, was kind of memed pretty relentlessly by ACC Twitter for a lot of his antics. And again, he was just a tall, thin guy who wasn't ready for the role he was thrown into. So it'll be interesting to see the rebounding back. I'll just get right to the rebounding situation. So like, I forget if you mentioned it, but like Pittsburgh's fifth in the country in defensive rebounding rate. But again, yeah, they've played four really bad bye games. So it's like, you know, will Florida hammer them on the glass? Will they be able to be competitive? Like this kind of is like a you know, a little bit bigger than Virginia's front line, but like not really that much. So like it'll be interesting to see, because that's kind of been obviously what Florida's been bludgeoning people with. Like Blake Hinson brings like is the one guy with like some serious bulk, but yeah, the player that I think is the most interesting on Pittsburgh is Carlton Carrington. He was like the 91st or 92nd ranked player in the country or in the 2023 recruiting class. And he has been fantastic to start the season. So he's like a 6'5" point guard, where like, I think a lot of people were like, kind of thought of him as like a lot of those tall point guards you see in the past that are like athletes, you know, they're defenders, but like they like struggle to shoot. And he's hitting like, he's already hit 14 3-pointers in four games at over 50%. He's has over 6 assists per game. He's scoring 18 points per game. Like he's just been electric. Like again, playing against low major opponents, but just getting downhill at will. He can make every pass because he's so tall. Maybe not like great reads yet, but just like the ability to like, he just can like kind of get to the paint without a real plan and then make things happen. And then he's shooting 52% from 3-point line on heavy volume. So he is a player that's very, very interesting to me. He is young. So that'll be, you know, yeah, it's kind of, you look at a 6'5" guard point guard and you're like, this is a natural kind of Zion Pullen matchup perhaps. Yeah. But it's, you know, Carrington's electric. I think he's one of the guys that like, I don't know if he was really on NBA radars and already people are like, oh man, this guy could get in the mix here already. So that is a player who I think is probably most important, because he is a freshman who could maybe go cold and have a rough game, or he could be the player that is a 6'5" guy shooting 52% from the field and getting to the rim at will, and that could be just a problem for the Gators.
Yeah, it's going to be a nice test for both players, right? Carrington, he's a coach's kid. Capel raved about him at there at ACC tip-off. He also raved about their other freshman in the backcourt who's played quite a bit, Jalen Lowe, who's Jai Lucas's nephew. Not Jai Lucas's. God, you know what I mean. John Lucas. You know, another coach's kid, comes from a basketball family. These are the types of people that, like, Jeff Capel loves to recruit. Like, he likes high IQ players. His teams tend to play pretty smart. But it's different, right? Because last year you had, like, Nelly Cummings and Jamarius Burton, who were, like, 23 and 24. And that was, like, your backcourt. And now you have a couple 18-year-olds, and then you have Ishmael Legette, who isn't a really prolific shooter, but is a good player, and then freshman. And so that's kind of what they have to rely on in their backcourt. And we'll see. I mean, obviously, you mentioned it. Carlton Carrington is, like, way too early freaky KenPom stats, like 26th in the country is offensive rating through four games. That's ridiculous. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how they deal with that. The other thing I'm interested is, like, how are they going to defend Florida? Like, let's see, you know, you mentioned maybe they bring out their zone. They played it a little bit last season. Usually just to slow people down. They always apply a lot of on-ball pressure. They like to get out high. Defensively, they don't kind of sit back in a slouched or packed in man-to-man. So they do. That's how they'll take you out of what you want to do, is with a lot of on-ball pressure. It's not quite Auburn level, but you know, they do like to aggressively pressure the basketball. And so that also puts a lot of pressure on Zion Pullen, I think, because we've seen Walter Clayton struggle to deal with that so far this season, Eric.
Yeah, and Pittsburgh wants to play really fast. So that'll play right into Florida's hand. I see that Florida will be happy to do that. I see KenPom has the game 80-79. So you can probably expect a pretty high possession, high scoring game. And then again, it's so hard to say exactly what Pittsburgh is, but in terms of rebounding, but I mentioned before they're fifth in the country in defensive rebounding. They are 14th in the country in offensive rebounding. So yes, they have bullied smaller teams. We'll see how that works, but I feel like this is yeah, it's going to be a track meet where both teams are content to play really fast, to just crash the offensive glass. And I think it'll kind of come down to who's able to rebound better, who is able to kind of get the easy ones in transition. And then maybe the biggest stylistic difference between the Gators and Panthers would be that and then actually, I mean, it's too early to say, so I haven't really brought it up before, but, like, it is interesting to me. Florida is 281st in the country in 3-point rate, which is, like, you know, you can talk about the percentage, which is sneakily better than I thought, at 33.3%. But what's most interesting to me is the fact that the Gators have not shot a lot of threes. And then you've got Pittsburgh, who is shooting a ton of threes, and they're hitting 38% of them. So, will that continue? Will they be able to get off a lot of threes? Because, again, Florida's defense is going to try to kind of take those away. But while there is, like, a definite, like, similar styles in terms of pace, in terms of crashing the offensive glass, the Gators have been a team that have been able to generate a lot more drives and get a lot more downhill, whereas Pittsburgh has been generating a lot more 3-point attempts. So will the Gators be able to limit those attempts? I think that'll be pretty big as well.
Yeah, no question. And, you know, the other thing is that they did well last season on their way to the second round of the NCAA tournament. And you mentioned it earlier with Federico and how he became so memeable and you know, just the grand twins being so skinny, but They do get second chance opportunities. I mean, they're not, I wouldn't say, you know, obviously they're a great defensive rebound team. They're not prolific right now in the way that they're attacking the offensive glass. I think some of that, again, is Jeff Capel saying, like, we really have to be simplistic in what we do defensively. So he wants floor balance right now. But, you know, Florida has done well on the defensive glass so far, but you can't give a guy like Federico easy baskets because he's not terribly skilled in terms of like creating his own stuff otherwise.
Yeah. And like, shout out to Capel, who has just put on an all-time hot seat performance last year. Just when you were talking about them making the NCAA tournament, like, just to like remind people, they got blasted to start the season last year by Michigan and VCU, who like, and West Virginia, who's, you know, so like not like awful losses, but like they lose a whole bunch in a row. And then they go to the ACC, who was down. They win a bunch of games there where it's like, how good were they totally? Then they really struggle to finish their season. They end the season 59th in KenPom, yet still make the NCAA tournament, kind of, you know, gaming the net system or just being a lucky beneficiary of the net system. And then it's like a lot of people were like, hey, they are actually pretty bad. They probably shouldn't have made the NCAA tournament. And then they win two games. So that also just shows the randomness of college basketball / the NCAA tournament. But
yeah,
as a 59th KenPom team who made the NCAA tournament as an at-large, that is, that's got to frustrate a lot of coaches. But Capel was on the hot seat and he got it done. And I don't know how much rope he winning those games, the NCAA tournament gave him, but you saw him schedule not super aggressively in the non-conference, and then, you know, the ACC is a little better than last year, so we'll see what happens. But some of those kind of tricks that you mentioned came out in big games, and they got the ones that mattered to make just enough of a resume to get in despite some bad overall computer numbers. I'm just really interested to see if they bust out anything different against the Gators.
Yeah, for sure. We'll see. I think just a huge game for both people. We've said it for weeks and weeks and weeks, and it's finally here, Eric. And the winner is very likely to get Baylor. We should talk about them since Florida and Pitt play on Wednesday night. And, you know, I know this is me slacking, but I will not be recording a show on Thanksgiving. Just kind of a looking at Baylor, Florida's potential opponent. They are kind of interesting to me because they're younger, once again, relying on a superstar freshman in Jacoby Walter. But they also brought in, you know, a transfer in Jaden Nunn, a transfer in Raj Dennis. So it's kind of like what Scott Drew has always done, bringing in older kind of grizzled transfers and then combining them with youth, whether it's Jacoby Walter, who has been really, really impressive early, or a guy like Langston Love, who looks like, he's getting better and is certainly at a minimum a guy who can attack the basket as a wing and get to the free throw line, which has been pretty effective against Florida in the first four games of the season. Just another top 10 Baylor team, basically.
Yeah, I mean, let's really talk about the real stakes at first. Oregon State, who the loser of Florida Pittsburgh will play. They just edged out Troy in a double overtime game by one. Then they had to go to overtime with Appalachian State and won. And then they lost by 19 to Nebraska. So they currently sit 187th in KenPom, and it's looking like that number could be higher than they could end up worse than that. So that's what happens to that's that's part of the reason why this game is so important for Florida. You don't want to be in a game with Oregon State when you could have an opportunity at Baylor. Like you said, this is kind of a regular Baylor team and kind of a team that Baylor has settled into the last few years, where they used to be known for their defense. Now they're very much an offensive team where their defense is leg behind a little bit. Hard to tell exactly against in the games that they've played so far. They did play Auburn and just kind of outscored them. Their defense wasn't great, but their guards are really good, so they outscored Auburn. Gardner Webb actually kept things fairly close with them, and it ended up being a 15-point Baylor win. But I watched that game, and Gardner Webb did a pretty good job of kind of slowing things down, and actually did pretty well against that front court of Baylor. And I think that that's kind of the key to this Baylor team is I think Ray J. Dennis is one of the big transfer portal additions. I think him and Langston Love and Jay Nunn, and then Jacoby Walter, the freshman that's been outstanding. I think those guys are really good. And then I think that their front court's a little bit more role player kind of guys. And I think that if you can kind of put the ball in their hands and try to make them playmakers as opposed to those guards, that's kind of how again, Gardner Webb had success for much of the game, kind of keeping things close. There's also times where Baylor wanted to play or was kind of forced to play a little bit smaller because of that. A 6'5", 195-pound Jacoby Walter, freshman, was playing some power forward minutes for them, just because I think that they were tired of big men having to getting the ball in their hands and not knowing what to do with it offensively. So, of course, if the Gators can force them to put out a few more ball handlers, that's where the Gators could start to really eat inside. So, this is the game we're all hoping to see. We, with all due respect to the Beavers, who are putting out a very enjoyable football product right now, I don't think anyone wants to see them on the court.
Hey, nice shout to Oregon State football. Florida fans probably still smarting from that Vegas Bowl beatdown. I think they can be had in the front court, man. Like Johnny Broom had a huge game against them. And if not for Dylan Cardwell just doing Dylan Cardwell things and just kind of recklessly pushing people around and getting early fouls on the offensive end, I think kind of eliminating the second big that Bruce Pearl could have gone to change that game. Maybe Auburn ends up winning. Auburn led for a while in that game and then kind of fell apart late. But the biggest reasons for that was like they just didn't have any real answer to Baylor's guards, whether it was Jacoby Walter or whether it was Raj Dennis. They just didn't know what to do. And Katie Johnson, they tried him for a little while on Walter. That was not a good choice. They had FIU transfer Denver Jones on Walter for a while. Also not an optimal choice. Bruce does not have like the backcourt that, we're used to at Auburn, and Baylor kind of feasted on it. We're able to get the come from behind victory, but Eric has pointed out like Baylor, their flaw last year was you could score on them and you could definitely score on them on the interior. And I still think that that's the case this season. It's just, again, I think we're going to find out a lot about this Florida backcourt up in Brooklyn in the next week.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I mean, to this point, it's been, I would say, the big story of Florida is offensive rebounding and winning games that way and staying competitive that way. Now you get Zion Pullen, and it's a situation where we get definitely look up by the end of this weekend or in a week and say like, oh no, it is the guards that are the strength of this team. And I do think that's where Florida's real talent lies, as good as Florida's front court has been. I think that the real talent is in the backcourt on the wing. So this would be a good time to establish it.
Yeah, no, I mean, no doubts about that. And by the way, I'm not trying to knock Auburn too much. I mean, they just rolled through their Feast Week tournament, winning, I think, a couple games. They beat Notre Dame by 24. And I'm pretty sure I know they were up on St. Bonaventure by 25. And anytime you can hammer the Bonnies like that, St. Bonaventure isn't always going to have elite talent, but they tend to play pretty hard and they're well coached. So I'm not trying to knock Auburn. It's a good win for Baylor. They didn't look like invincible Baylor. They looked like top 20 Baylor, and look, that's what Florida aspires to be, and that's kind of how I wanted to close the podcast today is like just kind of two comments, you know, and see what your take is on them. There is a surge of Twitter, Facebook, social media, like energy around this basketball team. And I think that's great. Like, I'm glad fans are excited again. They were not for the last couple of years of the White era. We can all admit that. And it does look like this team has an identity, and it does look like the upside for this team, especially offensively, is very high. Because there are things they're not doing well right now, and they're still top 25 in efficiency, right? They're not shooting free throws well. They're not, except for one game, hitting many shots. And they're still scoring at a pretty efficient rate. Some of that is just because they're killing people on the offensive glass, right? Some of it, AKA most of it. I think that excitement is great. I also would tell people that this is an important week because, like, the whole point of the decision to bring in Todd Golden was, let's elevate what the ceiling is at Florida. You know, again, from the White era. Well, step one of that is getting to the NCAA tournament in year two. And it's weird to say, but as tough a league as the SEC is, I mean, you heard Eric on the Over-Under show pick Florida to finish, what, ninth, eighth, something like that. Like, these are huge games for Florida this week.
Yeah, well, and again, it's I don't think that there's a lot of great opportunities on Florida's non-conference schedule. They had a good one with Virginia. They ultimately lost that one. The difference between a win over Pittsburgh and close loss to Baylor, or loss to Pittsburgh, win over Oregon State, is just going to be massive from a resume standpoint, from a computer number standpoint, from a fan interest standpoint. Ever since Florida's schedule was announced, this was the one you could circle as super important. And you play at Brooklyn, the kind of Gators after dark. A reminder to people, it's 9:30 tip, I believe, Eastern. It's the late one, which is, you know, great for me in the Mountain Standard time zone. I appreciate that. I know a lot of people won't. That's quite understandable. these would be ones that will be huge. And again, it's I mentioned after Virginia, but years ago or even last year, Florida loses that game against Virginia 61-59, and people turned it off long before the game finished. And this year, the Gators lose a tough game, a frustrating game, and still you had fans going away being like, hey, that's pretty fun. Like, this team plays with a lot of passion. Like, the energy's there. And that was what shocked me pleasantly. It's something we've talked about for years is, you know, style of play does matter. And as much as, like, the Gators lost, there's a style that people believe in, they enjoy watching and think could win. So I think that that's pretty big, but I don't think Florida State is very good. I think Pittsburgh is pretty good. You know, they made the NCAA tournament again. Wouldn't be surprised. If they were to lose this one, and you're looking at, like, oh, they played, you know, two pretty good teams and they lost to both of them. That's a tough look for fans who are, you know, trying to care about this team, particularly given the football situation. So I'm excited for this one. It's we circled it months ago as Florida's most important non-conference game, so ready to see it in action.
Agree with those takes. Just kind of wanted to you know, put a bow on that for people. Look, when they're I get it. I mean, when there was a game last year where Florida scored 12 points and a half, right? So a 52-22 first half would get me pretty juiced too. A huge run against a great program like Virginia to make it a competitive game to the last possession would get me excited too. And I am excited. I'm cautiously optimistic about how things are going to go in Brooklyn. It wouldn't surprise me if Florida won twice. It would surprise me. It would disappoint me, I think. And it would be harmful for Florida's resume if they lost Wednesday and then won the consolation game against Oregon State, though. Look, it's good to see people excited again. Certainly that wasn't the case at the end of the White era. So hopefully this week goes well and the Gators can get on a little bit of a roll here. I'll let Eric send us away.
All right. Have a great Thanksgiving, Neil. Have a great Thanksgiving, everyone listening, and enjoy the Gators. Go Gators and keep attacking closeouts.